Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, we got a great one today, you know, for a change. And let me tell you why. I think we've had a breakthrough. Peter, my executive producer, had this idea. Let's book guests who know what they're talking about and how to talk. And I think that's going to make the whole experience of listening to the Al Franken podcast a lot less painful. And my guest today is Michael Weiss. And Michael has reported extensively from Ukraine and was in Kyiv 3 weeks before the invasion. He is currently news director for New Lines magazine and is the New York Times bestselling author of ISIS Inside the Army of Terror. And you got to have balls to be inside the Army of Terror. That would terrify me. And I'm not going to do that. I'm doing this podcast. That's what I do. Now, obviously, the horrible, tragic, heartbreaking war in Ukraine is escalating every day. And I spoke with Michael on Tuesday, March 1st. So a lot has happened since then. But I think this is a very interesting interview for you, my listeners, you know, for a change. And I'm doing this intro on Thursday evening, the 3rd. So by the time this drops on Sunday, the situation on the ground will no doubt be much worse. I can't believe this is happening. Michael has some useful insights in the Putin. I can't believe what one evil man, Vladimir Putin, is doing to Ukraine and what he's doing to his own country. President Biden and the Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, have really done a remarkable job putting together a massive coalition to stand up to Putin. Practically every country in the world is with Ukraine, with some exceptions, but even China won't back Russia in the UN Security Council. The Swiss have joined in on the sanctions. They maintain their neutrality during World War II. I just like Trump getting the message that the Swiss think your pal Putin is worse than Hitler. This is so heartbreaking to watch. More than a million refugees thus far. Mothers with children. I'm seeing kids, my grandchildren's ages, in the cold, making their way with their moms hundreds and hundreds of miles to the border. I can't imagine. Children are being killed. Putin said today that the war in Ukraine is going according to plan. And of course, you know, it must be because, as you remember, as Trump said a week ago, Putin is basically, he's a genius. Peter, can we play some of that?
I said, this is genius. Putin declares a big portion of the Ukraine. Putin declares it as independent. Oh, that's wonderful. So Putin is now saying it's independent, a large section of Ukraine. I said, how smart is that? You got to say that's pretty savvy. And you know what the response was from Biden? There was no response. They didn't have one for that. No, it's very sad.
Yeah, you know what's sad? The House January 6th Select Committee just submitted a court filing with the evidence they've accumulated that President Trump, his lawyer John Eastman, and other Trump allies could be charged with several criminal violations, including obstructing an official proceeding of Congress and conspiracy to defraud the American people. The New York Times reported that in the filing they submitted, the committee submitted some of the voluminous evidence, quote, from more than 550 interviews with state officials, Justice Department officials, and Mr. Trump's aides. By the way, that's the style of the New York Times to call men Mr. So in an article after they said the person's full name and title, then they refer to them as Mr. or Ms., you know, like Mr. McConnell or Mr. Trump or Mr. McCartney. A number of years ago, they did an article about Meatloaf, and in the article, they kept referring to him as Mr. Loaf. So anyway, a number of Mr. Trump's aides have testified to the committee that they told Mr. Trump that he had lost. Now, here's a quote. Soon after Election Day, a campaign data expert, and he, this is in his words, in very blunt terms, told Mr. Trump that he was going to lose, suggesting that Mr. Trump was well aware that his months of assertions about a stolen election were false. So basically, Trump and Eastman and Giuliani and the others who disseminated false information about election fraud and pressured state officials to alter state election results and federal officials to assist that, and of course, tried to get the vice president to overturn the election. And in a filing to a federal district court judge, it was, quote, plausible to believe the president entered into a conspiracy with rioters on January 6th. So as we say, listen to this space. I hope that ends, and it ends with Donald Trump being prosecuted. This is being referred to Merrick Garland. I'm certain he's committed several crimes, Mr. Trump, and we need to prosecute him. And now to Michael Weiss on the events in Ukraine. And unfortunately, it is a tragic one, and I'm afraid that will be one of many. Thanks for listening.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Senator Franken, it's an honor and a privilege. I've been a huge fan of yours for many years.
Oh, we'll keep that in the recording here. Boy, oh boy, I'm going to ask you a question first, which is, Tucker Carlson said Putin's a tyrant, but so is Zelensky. Really? I mean, is Tucker right, as he usually is?
So I was in Kyiv about 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. Trying to make sense of why Ukraine was so surreally calm about the situation, given the the drumbeat of intelligence leaked by the US and the UK and other Western partners that war was imminent, which indeed proved to be correct. And, you know, a lot of Ukrainian politicians were quite down on Zelensky. No, it's not that he's a tyrant, but they found that he was going in a direction that was, ironically, given how he got elected on a campaign of anti-corruption and sort of uprooting all of the old status quo crap that has bogged Ukraine down for decades now. He was becoming very much like the people that he had used to satirize. So remember, this is a guy who, and I'm sure you'll amply empathize with this, was a TV star and a celebrity. He had a show that was kind of in the vein of Armando Iannucci, Veep-style parody called Servant of the People. Mm-hmm. And rather hilariously, he, in that show, he played a school teacher who one day, after suffering a series of petty daily frustrations, you know, not getting the metro on time, that kind of thing, he just kind of goes on this rant about the political establishment, bureaucracy, incompetence of the Ukraine system. And his students record it and upload it. It goes viral. And then at the next election, which happens in the course of a few days, he's the write-in candidate and wins. So Zelensky played a president on TV before he then ran for president under the platform of a party named for the series Servant of the People that made him famous. And then he won the presidency with a whopping 73% of the vote, which is kind of unprecedented for Ukraine. But when I was there, and again, this is 3 weeks ago, he was polling below 30%. So it seemed that he had kind of found himself in this very familiar rut of an incumbent who just wasn't doing well. People felt frustrated with the sluggish pace of reforms. Now, there is truth that he was looking to prosecute his predecessor, Petro Poroshenko, on charges of treason, and it's very complicated and heady, and I don't need to get into it all. But the bottom line is, what you're seeing now is a kind of extraordinary transformation of Charlie Chaplin into Winston Churchill, right? Nobody really knew that he had this in him. Perhaps I'm wrong about that. Perhaps some people did foresee that he would be this great Western leader and kind of bunker statesman, but I certainly didn't, and a lot of Ukrainians I spoke to didn't. But to call him a tyrant is, I think, grossly propagandistic and stupid. To put him anywhere near the moral plane of Vladimir Putin, I think, is obscene at this point, given what his country is withstanding at the moment. I mean, I'm seeing images just literally minutes before I logged on of Kharkiv in Ukraine's northeast, I mean, reduced to rubble.
What we have here in Ukraine, it appears to be potentially an amazingly horrible disaster. I mean, he is threatened. He's basically threatened use of nukes. Is he crazy? You know, you see these photographs of him mm-hmm. at a table with his advisors, and there's a 30-foot long table, and they're at the end. I mean, this is like something out of a satire, out of a dictator or something.
So look, here's what we can say with some degree of certainty. He is absolutely paranoid about COVID. I've been describing him as the man in the high castle. He makes foreign leaders who come to visit him, or who up until 5 days ago came to visit him, get a PCR test. And if they refuse, then he seats them at this sort of Kublai Khan style banquet table that we've all seen on Twitter and in the international news. Apparently, he makes his own Russian officials before visiting him provide fecal samples. So this is kind of like we're in Howard Hughes' white padded cell territory here, you know, keeping your urine in mason jars, according to the Russian press.
That's the Russian press.
That's the Russian press, right? So that's not, I'm not spitballing here from just Western impressionistic point of view. Whether or not he's really gone mad, I don't know. Fiona Hill, who's a superb Russia analyst, and everybody now knows her name because of the impeachment, she gave a long interview to Politico in which she said she does believe that he's capable of pushing the button. We're not there yet, but she thinks that he is of such a mind that if he feels totally cornered, if he feels that he is possibly facing some kind of palace coup or military putsch in Moscow, that this is this sort of a last resort. I think as Fiona put it, he doesn't develop weapons unless he plans to use them.
Well, let me ask you what that would look like. Would that be a tactical nuclear weapon, or would that be the end
Could
of all?
Be.
Of us?
I mean, you know, people are worried that he might deploy tactical nukes to Ukraine to make a very dramatic point.
That would be dramatic.
Yeah, without fear mongering and without getting too alarmist, I would say this. I don't start panicking until I hear from U.S. officials that they begin to see untoward activity happening with respect to Russia's strategic defenses. So he put out this order, and I can't parse the nitty gritty of what it means, you know, down to the level of, you know, silos and all that. But there's been very good reporting. President Biden came out. The White House has been firm. We've not noticed any suspicious activity. We're not changing our DEFCON posture. Don't start to worry yet. I think a lot of this too, and keep in mind, what did we see in the months preceding this invasion? What did we see in, I think, a 72-hour period preceding this invasion, which U.S. intelligence, to its credit, accurately predicted? A massive disinformation campaign designed to essentially gin up a pretext for going to war. False flag operations, many of them scenery collapsing. The nuke threat, I think, and I hope that I'm right about this, and I obviously it has far-reaching ramifications if I'm wrong. I see it as a feint designed to essentially do this, get us to talk about the threat of nuclear war, World War III, in order for the West to de-escalate or start making concessions. Sure. Now, I think the West has been pretty good about calling his bluff so far. And I think, as I said, until you start to hear from U.S. intelligence that we're now at, you know, 5 minutes to midnight, don't panic, because this is part of an old KGB playbook of what's known as active measures. You try to sow fear, confusion, and doubt in the mind of your enemy so that your enemy either starts to make mistakes or your enemy kind of crumples like a wet sock.
Well, I was watching Morning Joe today.
Yeah.
And they had a woman who was in their parliament who was in D.C. Mm-hmm. And she was basically saying, you've got to come in and help us.
Right.
And she wasn't saying, she basically was saying, give us air cover, do all that kind of stuff. And that's where Putin said, if you do that, means nuclear war, basically. And then I saw Chris Coons come on afterwards, and I could see him going, like, basically saying, no way we're doing
right.
we're doing that. And I guess that is a sort of a check, you know, as in chess, a check like, oh, I'm going to play this one and you can't right. come in, right?
Well, look, I mean, let's be very clear and not resort to euphemism here. So I completely understand and sympathize with Ukrainians who say, bail us out, please give us a no-fly zone. Our civilians are being massacred. Our cities are being reduced to rubble. But I also know the Ukrainians well. And I, like I said, I was there 3 weeks ago and I talked to very senior leadership. They know that they're going to have to fight this alone. So when a deputy of the Rada gets on TV and talks about give us a no-fly zone, no doubt she wants it and would take it. But she also probably realizes she's not going to get it. And a no-fly zone in Ukraine means America goes to war with Russia, full stop. It means America has to shoot down Russian planes. It means America has to take out Russian anti-aircraft defense systems. And you really, there's no other way to describe that other than war. That is a massive escalation. And yes, you then get into this really dangerous territory of possible nuclear engagement. However, there are other alternatives. Ukraine can defend itself. We've seen that. I mean, look at all the prognostications that Kyiv would fall within 24, 48 hours. Here we are 5 days later. Kyiv has not fallen.
I know, but so what if it's 3 weeks?
Well, no, I mean, the time does matter because, I mean, the Russian military momentum gets lost. I've seen videos. I mean, I could not have predicted this with the best Hollywood writer's room. I've seen Ukrainian peasants driving tractors pulling abandoned Russian anti-aircraft systems. There's a TikTok video of a very attractive blonde Ukrainian woman showing people how to operate a Russian tank or BTR, which had been just left in the road. I've seen mass desertions. I've seen a lot of Russians get captured. I've seen a lot of Russians get killed. Graphic videos of them charred out corpses on the side of the highway. Ukraine is putting up a really serious fight, a fight I think many in the West didn't think they had in them. Now, Ukraine can defend itself further if they're given proper air defense systems, if they're given certain anti-aircraft battery systems. One of the things they've been banging on about for a long time is Patriot missiles. Patriot missiles don't just take out planes. They can also take out rockets. They can also take out artillery. There's a lot of things that they can do themselves if we provide them with the materiel. Now, I think one of the disincentives to do that up until now was, if we do that, then that's this kind of escalation, and then Putin escalates. Well, Putin is already escalating. Let's just be very clear here about what he plans to do. We're seeing it. I mean, Kharkiv looks like Aleppo now. It looks like Grozny. And if he plans to do the same thing to Kyiv, we're looking at a kind of genocidal campaign here. So when I see, for instance, Luxembourg which I didn't think they had anything other than funny hats and banks, but apparently they have anti-tank systems. When I see Luxembourg, of all countries, arming Ukraine, we're past the point of worrying about will he, won't he, how is he going to take this. I think the West should do everything it can. Give the Ukrainians everything
they want. The Swiss
and Switzerland and Monaco are enforcing sanctions. I mean, go back and watch Casino Royale. Can you imagine, like, 10 years ago, Monaco, of all places, saying that we're going to get rid of all this dirty Russian money in our bank accounts? I mean, I've never seen international solidarity like this.
Okay, well, then let me ask you about what that means in Russia.
Right.
Because what we're kind of all hoping is, we've seen a lot of demonstrations now in Russia, which people were putting themselves at great risk by doing that. What are the chances that Putin is in jeopardy here of keeping power?
So the European intelligence officials that I speak to say, we have not seen such a chance or such a likelihood for a coup or some kind of takeover of power in Moscow in 22 years, since 2000. When, you know, obviously Yeltsin was on his way out and Putin was on his way in. And Yeltsin could barely stand up because he was so drunk and on the verge of cardiac arrest. When they say stuff like that, I take it seriously. Now, again, there are a lot of Russians who absolutely cannot stand this war. I know that for a fact. 6,000 people have been arrested under very forbidding circumstances, right? Because, you know, many thousands of people turned out in 2011 to protest the stealing of an election. But since that time, we're looking at 11 years now, Putin has consolidated his power and essentially hollowed out the opposition. Alexei Navalny, the only person who could in any way credibly challenge him for the presidency, is in a penal colony after he himself had been poisoned with Novichok. So for people to turn out and oppose this regime for going to war is very brave and very noble. However, I'm looking at what's happening in the Kremlin itself and in the special services. And already I'm beginning to see signs of wobbliness. If you talk to people who used to be in CIA or MI6, they've got a Cheshire Cat grin on their face because they see this as an opportunity for recruiting.
Do we have people inside the Kremlin?
I would be incredibly surprised. Incredibly surprised if CIA or its partner services in NATO countries have not recruited very high level human sources in the Russian government, including in the presidential administration itself. I cannot see it any other way. I don't believe that the US got this intelligence, very granular, detailed, literally the war plan itself.
And it was unusual for us to sort of start saying, this is what they're doing.
Yep.
And to me, it seemed like, okay, why hadn't we done that before? We're compromising intelligence sources, or it didn't seem like we were worried about that this time.
No, look, I think there was a learning curve here. So, you know, the United States has spent the last 20 years and change fighting a global war on terror. We forgot about our old main adversary, which, it might have changed the ideological nature of its system, but certainly the kind of KGB mentality has persisted. And Putin himself is a former case officer from the KGB. So the intelligence services, the way they think, their tradecraft has remained the same. 2014 came around. Crimea was taken over in a bloodless annexation invasion, which was easy for them to do because the Black Sea Fleet was there at Sevastopol. And then this dirty war in Donbass breaks out, and it's all very murky and hard for the average person to parse. Like, are the Russians really in Ukraine, or are these separatist Ukrainians? I mean, I think the U.S. was on the back foot then. In the last 8 years, the U.S. has gotten a lot better at sort of countermanding or preempting disinformation. I mentioned this term of art, active measures, which is an old KGB term. And the purpose of the leaks, well, there were two. One was to try and stop the war. You know, I mean, the idea being that if we burn Putin's intelligence and his campaign before it even happens, he'll blink and then give it up. I mean, that's typically what a Western government would do if they've been so exposed. He didn't do that. But the other purpose was use it to rally international solidarity, get allies, especially wobbly ones such as Germany and perhaps France, on side, and get them on side early. So that when shit hits the fan, pardon my French, nobody's surprised about how it went down, or nobody's buying into any of the Russian propaganda. And also, we can then enact sanctions more quickly. I remember after Crimea, it took 5 months for the U.S. Treasury Department to pass the first suite of sanctions. 5 months. Now we're passing them within hours. And we're passing devastating ones, including going after the central bank.
And what was the thing they did where he had put away like a rainy day fund of like how much? $560 billion or something?
Like that, yeah. So the idea was to essentially protect Russia from exactly this, right? To make sure that if there is some decoupling from the international financial system, Russia can weather the storm Stalingrad style.
We don't know what's going to happen in the next 5 days, let alone in the weeks ahead. But it seems to me right now we're looking at a lot of carnage.
Yep.
And then probably they come in to Kyiv, they take over Kyiv, however much carnage there is there and destruction. And I imagine a lot. And I imagine they'll be door to door. I mean, they'll be fighting in the city, right?
It could well go that way. Or if they do to Kyiv what they've been doing to Kharkiv, they will destroy the city and there'd be nothing left for them to really occupy. And yes, I mean, it'll devolve into partisan warfare like Madrid in 1936, house to house, you know, going through walls and buildings, you know, close combat with the enemy, that kind of thing. But look, again, I cannot emphasize this enough. Every time sort of Russian military personnel make contact with Ukrainian counterparts, it doesn't really end well for the Russians. Either they run away, or they get killed, or they get captured. So in terms of occupying a city like Kyiv, which has got pretty good defenses in place and has had them for a while, I don't see it going so well for Russia. And look, if you listen to Putin's own, as I mentioned earlier, his worldview, the Ukrainians and the Russians are one people. If they're one people, which they're not, but that's how he thinks. If they're one people, then your legacy is going to be a grievous civil war in which you've killed your own people. And that ain't the stuff of Peter the Great. That's not something that a remolded 21st century czar wants on his gravestone. But that's what he will do.
So this is a huge miscalculation on his part.
I think it is. And I think it's not too much to imagine that essentially Putin put a gun to his own head and the bullet, however slowly it may be progressing, has left the chamber with this. And that's not something I would have, I mean, this is a guy whose regime, anybody you ask, was seen as very secure and stable for a very long time, but things change. I mean, it was Lenin who said that, you know, sometimes there are decades where nothing happens and then there are weeks when decades happen. I think we've seen a week in which a decade or more has happened.
So he's shot himself in the foot, and there's no out here for him.
Well, there is an out. It's just not one that I think he's capable of accepting, which is withdraw your forces and come to some kind of settlement. But again, if he is as Fiona Hill describes him, this is not somebody who's going to back down. But if he runs out of troops, if he runs out of fuel, if he runs out of airplanes and helicopters and artillery, or if he loses so much of it that essentially strategically he cannot do what he aims to do, okay, then what then?
It feels like that takes a while.
It does take a while. And look, I'm not saying that it's going to go that way necessarily. Kyiv could very well be sacked. But even if Kyiv falls, you still have a broad swath of Western Ukraine that is uncontested by ground forces. It's sustained some rocket fire. I mean, but like cities like Lviv in the west on the Polish border, a government can relocate there. You know, I brought up the Battle of Madrid in 1936. Prior to that battle, days before, the Republic of Spain relocated all government officials to Valencia and left in Madrid a Junta de Defense, which is a defense junta to hold the city. So, I mean, Ukraine might not fall if Kyiv falls.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Michael Weiss.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances,
places. Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, we're back with Michael Weiss. Zelensky.
Yeah.
Is he going to make it through this? I mean...
Look, I don't know. I mean, he is public enemy number one to Putin. And I absolutely, and everybody I think now, nobody would dispute that he is a very high value target for assassination. But, you know, if Kyiv doesn't fall, if the Russians cannot penetrate, he could very well endure. If he feels that the city is slipping from his grasp and that given the leadership he has shown up to now, he's better serving his country to evacuate, he could, as I say, relocate to Lviv or someplace else in the country where it's not contested space.
Yeah, I imagine he has plans.
Well, probably, but look, even if he does get killed, let's worst case scenario, this guy is already a legendary political and military figure of the 21st century that nobody saw coming. He will be a martyr for generations of Ukrainians, and they do not lack for those. So it won't be over, even if he dies.
No. It'll be over for him, though. And
sure. Nobody wants to see that happen.
Yes. You know, he's a Jewish comedian, which, of course, are the bravest people in the world.
As we know. You know, you said it. I mean, there, photos of him and his defense minister is also Jewish.
Yeah, but not a comedian. It's the Jewish comedians.
The Jewish comedians, that's right. In the that's world. Right.
He was a Russian speaker, Zelensky, right?
His first language, I think, is Russian, yes.
I think he did his comedy in Russian at first.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is another myth that the Kremlin has propounded, which is that there's somehow an attack on Russian speakers in Ukraine. Most Ukrainians speak Russian, and those who don't, ironically enough, have taken up Ukrainian, the language, only as a kind of fuck you to Russia for taking over their territory.
Well, there's something also to be said, you know, I feel bad for Russian moms and dads and brothers and sisters, but, you know, the more Russian soldiers that come back in body bags, that's going to be a real pressure also on Putin.
That arguably is what hastened the collapse of the Soviet Union. It's known as Cargo 200 from Afghanistan. So Cargo 200, just to give you some perspective on this, Afghanistan was 9 years, I believe. And in those 9 years, the Soviets lost about 14,000 people. According to Ukraine's Ministry of Defense, and these figures are beginning to be corroborated by Western officials, the Russians have already lost upwards of 5,000 men. So they have lost a pretty high percentage already of the total that they lost over the course of 9 years. They lost in 5 years. I mean, their nose has been pretty bloodied, if not broken already. And if those figures continue to pile up, it's going to be very hard for Putin to sort of make the case that, well, he can't make the case that he's winning the war. And the Russian media has been portraying this. I mean, it's sort of Alice in Wonderland. It took them several days to even acknowledge casualties on the front. Prior to that, I've seen instances where essays heralding the final settlement of the Ukraine question, as they put it, meaning we've won the war, the government's been toppled, Ukraine now belongs to Russia. Articles were uploaded to the internet prematurely and then had to be taken down because they didn't win the war.
So in other words, all news there is like Fox.
It's all under, yes, Trump. Yeah. Well, actually, quite literally in some cases, because they love to play Tucker Carlson on Ukrainian state television.
Oh, good. I'm glad someone in our country is giving aid and comfort to the Russians. Thank God. Because that only probably result in the deaths of, I don't know, thousands of people. But you know what? Tucker makes a lot of money. Did you know that?
I'm sure he does.
And let me tell you why. Well, you can say to yourself, look, I'm very talented. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to be a truth teller and work for the common good of everybody as I see it. Or you can say, I'm a worthless piece of shit. And the only way I can make money is this way.
If you say so, yeah, I never met him. I know people who used to call him friend.
Do they still do?
No, I don't. Well, now they're all being eviscerated on his show, including David Frum. I think Bill Kristol, who used to publish him in the Weekly Standard.
Yeah, hired him. I mean, I think, yeah.
You know, I don't pretend to know the psychology there. I frankly don't even care at this point. I mean, you know, he's sufficiently embarrassed for his water carrying for Putin. Let me just kind of posit this. I think a reason that a lot of American conservatives or what has become this sort of new reactionary right, even the intellectual class, such as it is of MAGA land, one of the reasons that they really plumped for Putin is in him they saw a kind of masculine leader who didn't take no for an answer, who wasn't allowing drag queens to read children's books to your kids, who, you know, wasn't, you know, even though he's paranoid about COVID, never mind all that, you know, this isn't a guy who's going to mask up. This isn't a guy who's going to be cowed by anybody. He's doing what he wants. This is a true bulwark of Western values and, you know, patriotism and sort of civilizational virtue. When in fact, all of that was just a carefully choreographed pantomime, really, of masculinity. You know, Putin, the shirtless horseback rider, Putin, the deep sea and four-eyed diver, Putin, the whale harpooner, and all this stuff. This was manufactured originally for a domestic Russian audience, but then exported for essentially useful idiots and gullible types in the West who bought it hook, line, and sinker. And now I ask you, the Jewish comedian in Kyiv wearing a T-shirt, dialing in to EU minister meetings, leaving them all in tears, begging them for support, begging them for membership status of Ukraine in the European Union, begging them for sanctions, begging them for weapons, versus the man who's asking his own government officials to do anal swabs before he's willing to shake their hand, who's seating the president of France, you know, at a coming to America style Zamunda palace table. I mean, who's the real masculinist now? Who's the real man in this scenario? I'd love to hear that from this sort of MAGA crowd. You know, the nice thing about lickspittle useful idiots is that inevitably the dictator that they love, or at least pretend to love, always puts egg on their face, always lets them down, always humiliates them in the worst possible fashion. And you know what? They deserve it.
Well, yeah. I mean, Trump called him a genius, or characterized what he was doing as genius.
Yeah, some genius. He went from one of the most internationally integrated economies to North Korea in the space of 48 hours, you know? Like, he plays 8D chess while backflipping people judo style, you know? I mean, this is a master strategist. He's a real genius.
Yeah. Well, Trump knows genius when he sees it.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you imagine Donald Trump in Kyiv?
Well, no, he wouldn't be in Kyiv anymore.
He would never have been in Kyiv. He would have been on the first plane out the minute the United States called him and said, we have initial indications that your country might be taken over in the next 2 to 3 months. Look, I mean, again, you know, I spent a lot of time in Europe, particularly the Baltic states and, you know, former Warsaw Pact or former Soviet countries. And I like to joke with people that the farther east you go, the more west you wind up until you get to basically St. Petersburg or Moscow. And I mean, now I see that writ large. Kyiv is essentially the capital of the West right now, what it's going through. And I think the West has finally woken up and realizes it.
Well, there are different ways for people to help. We have already 500,000 refugees.
And a million internally displaced.
Right. And they're going to be, depending on how long this lasts, could be as many as 4 million or 5 million refugees. So I think I just encourage my listeners to help those people. There's different organizations to do that. I like HIAS, which is it's the Jewish organizations that been helping refugees since, I think, for over 150 years or something like that. But they've been in Ukraine for quite some time, and they were also helping with Afghan refugees. But I just would encourage people to help the people of Ukraine in any way they can, because we can. We can. We're lucky here. Boy, are we lucky.
Yep.
Well, this is bleak. This is bleak. These people are amazingly brave, and I hope we can take some inspiration from them, and I hope we can help in any damn way we can, short of starting World War III, which Putin may be in a corner where, you know, when you die, it's the end of the world. There's no world left when you're dead. And right. So he might want to take everybody with him. I don't know how crazy he is.
Well, I don't think anybody fairly does at the moment, but look, it is bleak. And to paraphrase the words of a RADA deputy that I interviewed, who it's a woman who was wearing, you know, it looked like a, I don't know, women's fashion, but you know, she was kitted out in like a Chanel suit. And she spoke English with what sounded like an American or British educated accent. I mean, she had told me, this was again 3 weeks ago, I'm going to go to a rifle range and learn how to operate a firearm, and I will defend my country come what may. And she said, you know, you in the West, you don't realize that this struggle is not just about Ukraine. We're fighting on your behalf, whether you're cognizant of it or not. And I think she has proved to be quite prescient in that assessment.
The irony, of course, is that right now our democracy is very fragile.
Correct.
And what we've seen lately with not just voter suppression, but laws, but also laws to take over the administration of elections. And this, the fact that, I don't know, 2/3 of Republicans believe the election was stolen. It's really scary here. And we have these people risking their lives, giving their lives for democracy and for freedom. And we're in jeopardy of losing it here.
Well, you know, I posted to Twitter because I couldn't resist a photo of Michael Flynn giving the QAnon salute, juxtaposed to a photo of Valery Kondratyuk, who's the former head of Ukraine's military intelligence service, so Flynn's counterpart in Ukraine, holding an RPG launcher and prepared to die to defend his country. So, yes, you're quite right. Democracy is a fragile thing. It can slip through your fingers at any moment. And, you know, America has just kind of sort of crawled out from a really horrible crisis, which it could very well descend back into at any moment. But yeah, I mean, you talk about inspiration. I lost a lot of cynicism this week. You know, I'm a snarky guy. I'm pessimistic by nature. I have no clever comeback for what Ukrainians have done, right? And I hope a lot of people who might have, you know, sort of dismissed their plight or thought of it as some faraway conflict in a place they've never been to, much less could they locate on a map. You know, now they realize what the Ukrainians are up against, but also what we're up against, which is perhaps more important to the average American.
Well, thank you. And let's see what happens. Man, oh, man. Keep our fingers crossed that maybe Putin will go, you know what, this isn't worth it.
Or maybe, you know, people in his inner sanctum do an Operation Valkyrie that succeeds. You never know.
Now, that's like putting the bomb under his desk?
Well, they don't have to do that. I mean,
but was that Operation Valkyrie? Was that that?
That was that, yeah. But I mean,
this
version I could see, I mean, they've shown they're pretty proficient with chemical and weapons and nerve agents and poisons. I mean, it doesn't have to go that way.
That would be ironic, wouldn't it? If he.
Yeah, right. Novichok on the underwear for VVP.
Yeah. He checks his underwear all the time, I guess.
Well, you know.
Not,
apparently, he's checking other people's underwear. He's asking for people's.
Exactly. Well, and that's a good note to end on. Thank you, Michael, and keep working this.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you, like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.